We're going to learn Daf Mem Dalet and Masechtas Ksubis. We're going to start from the third line from the top of Omar Mar. But just to give you a background of what's going on over here, so the Gemara beforehand was discussing the question of when does the Chiyuv Ksuba, the Shibud Ksuba start. So we're going according to the Man D'Omer that says that there's already a Chiyuv Ksuba starting from the Erisin, which means just from the moment they got engaged, again, halachically engaged, so then already there is a chiyuv to pay the $100 or $200 zuz. Then eventually they get married. There's no ksuba then. It's just there's a din ksuba, but there's no actual written contract. Then when they get married, that's when they sit down and they actually write the contract itself. Okay, fine. So now the question is, when does the shibud of that 200 start? Does it start from the time of the erisin, when he had the obligation, or does it start from the time that they actually wrote the contract? So if he were to, for example, if the husband were to sell a property during the engagement, before they got married, and then so he sold the property before the shibud starts, if you hold that the shibud only starts, so that's what we're going. According to Rav Huna, the shibud starts during the 200 zuz, the basic, starts from the eris, and that's Rav Huna's chiddush, and we're gonna focus, according to Rashi, we're gonna focus on Rav Huna. The shibud starts actually from the engagement, but if you add anything extra, which we typically do, we add an extra, add extra money in the ksuba, so then that starts only from the time of the ksuba. Why is it putting more money? Because that's the minig. The minig is to, now, for example, very often in a ksuba, because he loves her. That's the same reason why you give presents and the same, right? This is what you do in a ksuba. Again, it's not so strong of a minig on our side, but people do this all the time. Anyway. Then the Gemara discussed just a side point. So what if you, in general, if you have two contracts which seem to be discussing the same topic or being, right, either selling the same property or whatever it is, putting a shibud on the same property. So we say that according to the Gemara that the second contract overrides the first contract. So that's the background that you need for what the Gemara was discussing before, and now we can jump into what the Gemara is going to say. The Gemara is going to continue on that topic. In fact, we're quoting the same thing we said before. So, Amar Mar, third line from the top. Iboi b'hai gavya, iboi b'hai gavya. So the case over here was where the guy actually wrote two ksubas. He wrote one ksuba for 200 zuz, and then, let's just say, to make it extreme, a year later he writes a second ksuba for 300 zuz. So the halacha is, or this is what the Gemara is saying, if she wants, she could use either one. She can come to Bezin, and eventually, let's say he dies or get divorced, so she can come to Bezin and she can produce either one of those ksubas. But whichever ksuba she uses, that ksuba takes total control. So for example, as we said, he wrote the more expensive one a year later. The shibud for the more expensive one only starts a year later. But if she wants, you can collect with each one you want. Fine. That's the statement that we said before. So, Lema Pliga, the Rav Nachman. So this statement sounds like it argues on Rav Nachman's halacha. Dama Rav Nachman, shtei shtorois hayoytzes bezeh achar zeh. He says as a general rule, when you have two contracts, one produced right after the other one, bitul sheni es harishoin. So it destroys the second one completely supersedes and overrides the first contract. We don't look at the first contract as an option at all. And here we're saying if she wants, she could use the first contract for the lesser amount, the first ksuba, if she wants to. So, and Rav Nachman's saying no, it's automatic that the second one overrides. So the Gemara answers, Lav mi itmar Allah, didn't we already explain as follows? Amar Rav Papa. Rav Papa explained, Umayda Rav Nachman, that even Rav Nachman himself admits in the situation, that if he adds an extra tree, that tree is meant as a toisefes and not meant to override. It's meant only as an addition. So since it's an addition, it doesn't override the first one. And the first one is still in play. And the second one is just there for the purposes of adding that extra little bit. So Hachanami, Ha'osef L'midi, over here also we added a little bit. Because remember, the case that we're discussing is the case where the first ksuba was 200 zuz, and the second ksuba was 300 zuz. So that extra 100 is an addition. And once you have an addition, so then it's not exactly the same contract. It's not a duplicate. So if it's a duplicate contract, then we say that the first one is no longer valid and the second one becomes the valid contract. But if it's an addition, we say, oh, it's meant as a modification and not as, using legal terms here, and not as a novation. A novation is a problem. So if you ever did a modification or an addendum to your mortgage, you'll see that there's a sentence in there that says, this is not a novation. Okay, it'll say that. Novation means that this is new and it supersedes the previous one. That's what a novation is. Novation is we're replacing the old and putting in the new. So when you do an because as you know with a mortgage, the shibud goes back to when it was recorded. If you do an novation, the shibud only goes back as to this new contract. So that's what this concept is also over here. That it's not, that it's just an addition and it's not a novation, and therefore the first shibud is still in place if you want to use that contract. Okay, so that's the concept. So as long as you're doing something different, it shows that it's not a contradiction to the first contract, and you could use either one. But let's explain a little bit further. Gufa Amar Rav Nachman. So we said Rav Nachman's halacha was Shnei Shtaros Hayoytzes Bezeachaze. If you have two contracts which are similar one after the next, Bittel Sheni Esarishin. So automatically the second one overrides the first one. Amar Rav Papa, and this is all what we said before. Rav Papa says Umay the Rav Nachman admits the Oisef Be Dikla L'Toysefes Kosfei. That if you add an extra tree to your contract, let's say I sold the property, and now I say I'm selling exactly the same property plus the extra tree next door. So now we say that the second contract is just there for the purposes of adding that extra tree, and the first contract is not invalidated. Okay, so that's what we saw before. Pshita. So now you have to actually read it. The whole sentence as follows: Pshita rishon b'mecher v'sheni b'matono. Now, why are you writing a second shtar? So if the first shtar was written as a sale, and the second one is written as a present, there's no consideration over here, I'm just simply giving you the property, then it's poshut that it works. The cost of lay mishum dina de bar metzra. Because now I'm giving you the power of bar metzra. So as we, bar metzra is the halacha in general, that the neighbor, the adjacent owner, it's either the adjacent or, you know, as the closest neighbor, has first dibs on the property if you ever want to sell it. Because it has more value to the adjacent owner than it does to anybody else. So he has first dibs on the property if you try to sell it to a third party. However, this halacha bar metzer, interestingly, is only applicable if you try to sell. If you're selling, so then he says you have to sell it to me first. But if you give away the property b'matana as a gift to somebody, there is no din of bar mitzvah. I can give a gift to whoever I want. And the person living there, or the person living adjacent, has no right to interfere or stop you giving a present to somebody else. So if I wrote the first shtar as a mecher, and the second shtar as a matana, the purpose of the second shtar is just to convert it into a matana, so that the neighbor can no longer come with a taina of bar mitzvah, that I'm the border, I'm the boundary guy, and I get to take this property. So therefore we understand that the second contract is there for the sole purposes of giving him this extra power, but it doesn't necessarily undermine the first power of the shibud from beforehand. Now, that's the first way. That's the first way we look at it. The strategy was that I'm selling it to you. You're going to give me $1 million, but you're going to give me $1 million. The neighbor is going to say, "I want to buy the property. You're not allowed to sell it to him. So I have a right to pull it, to take it away from the lekeach and keep it for myself. I have a right to invalidate your sale." So then you go ahead and you give the guy a gift. You gift that same property to the same loikeah. What?
No, I
understand. But you're gifting it to him. You're writing in a contract, I'm giving it to you as a gift. And then if the guy, the bar mitzvah comes and shows up in court and says, what do you mean? You should give it to me because I'm the neighbor. You say, no, I gave it to him as a matana. He's able to pull out the matana star, and then the bar mitzvah doesn't have a complaint. That's talking about if the contract was first, and the sale was first, and the matana was second. Then the Gemara says, what about the other way around? The kol shekain, rishon b'matana v'sheni b'mecher, and certainly if the first contract was just a present, and the second contract was given as a sale, the amrina mishamdina debal choiv hu dekasev kain. The reason why he wrote the second contract was because by saying it as a sale, this power of the second contract is that I'm always responsible. Generally speaking, when I sell a contract to somebody else, and if anybody ever comes and claims, let's say I sell it to you, but I owed somebody $1 million. I owed the bank $1 million. So the bank has the right to say, oh, pay it, you have to give me that field because I really had a prior lien. From before. And so the halacha is the bank gets to take it. But you, the purchaser, get to come back to the seller and say, okay, give me back my $1 million. There's responsibility here that I can't just have somebody, you pay me $1 million and then have somebody else take that field from you.
You don't walk away.
You don't walk away. Now that's only talking about if I sold it to you. But if I give it to you as a gift, I don't owe you anything. If I give you a gift of a field, and then the bank comes and takes the field away from you, you can't come back to say, well, you gave me $1 million value, so now you have to pay me $1 million. That's not the way it works. Right. So therefore, if the first contract was written as a matana, and then the second contract is written as a sale, the only reason I'm giving it to you, the second contract as a sale, to show you that I will take responsibility that if you lose the property, somebody takes it away as a result of my misbehavior, so you get to collect on that second star. Okay? Because I really want to give it to him. Because I really want him to have the value. It could be. So far we've been discussing cases where one was b'mecher, one was b'matano, whatever the order is. You always meant the second star as an addition to give him more, to give him the benefit of the second star. Elo, what about ishneim b'mecher, ishneim b'mecher, ishneim b'matano? But when you dealing with the two contracts are identical, they're both exactly the same thing and serve the same purpose. Bitul sheni es harishon. The second one overrides the first one, and then the first one is no longer valid at all. My taimo, and why is that? Why did he mean that to invalidate the first contract? Rafram says Amar. This is a very interesting chiddush. Amar, because he's saying aduye oidu le. What he's doing is he's admitting that the first contract was invalid, was false, was he never meant it for whatever reason. There's something wrong with the first contract, and that's why you have to do the second contract. Again, in the world of real estate, we call that a corrective deed. Right, so sometimes you have a corrective deed where there's something wrong with the first deed, so you go ahead and you do the second deed. It's the same thing, it's the same parties. The only reason you're doing the second deed is because there was a mistake with the first one and you want to fix the mistake. So he's admitting that the first one was invalid. That's one shot. Rav Acha Omar, Rav Acha gives us Ema Chule Achle L'Shibude, or he's saying very simple. He's saying, no, the first one was valid, but I don't want to take responsibility for that time frame. In other words, if something happened between year one and year two when I wrote the second contract, I don't want to take responsibility. I'm not responsible if there's a claim based on what happened in the first year. So therefore, I want to be moichel the shibud. Fine. So my benayu, what would be the difference between whether you hold the first shot or the second shot? Iku benayu iruye sadi. One nafkamina would be, does that make the witnesses, the edim, on the first star invalid? So the Rishonim grapple with this, how you're able to decide that the Edim on the first star are invalid, what kind of invalidity, how invalid are those Edim, but it essentially is saying that the first Edim signed on a contract which was invalid. The second nafkamina is l'shlume peri. Does the owner have to pay for the use, the rent, of the payrois during that first year, right? Because if I'm write a contract the first year, and then I come back in the second year and I say, oh, by the way, that first contract was invalid, that means that the entire year that you were on the property, you really had no rights to that property. So now you have to pay me rent for that first contract. Well, the Tosca, and similarly, if there's a tax on the... the question is, who has to pay the taxes on the property? So if the first contract is invalid, so then the original owner has to pay the taxes for that year, because it was still his property. If the contract was valid, it's just that you wanted to give him an extra shibud, or transfer the timing of the shibud, so then it really did belong to the second guy, the loikeach, the purchaser, and the purchaser is going to have to pay the taxes. So there are three nafkaminos. It makes a difference whether it's a question of whether the first contract is invalid or the first contract was valid. You're just transferring when the shibud goes into effect. The Gemara continues. Mayhava leksuba. So we talked about, you know, very contracts in the context of selling and things like that. But what is the bottom line? What do we hold lahalacha when you have two ksubas, where the second ksuba seems to replicate the first ksuba? Which one, or when does the shibud for the first 200 zuz, when does that take effect? So Toshima, so I'll bring you a right. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Mishum Rav Elazar, Rav Shimon. So he says, Mono Masayim in Eirusin. Basically, Paskins like Rav Huna, in this case. He says, Mono Masayim in Eirusin, that the first 200 zuz, that's actually from the engagement when the husband was already responsible. But Toysefes min Anasuin, and anything extra, that only starts when you actually write the ksuba when they get married. That's what Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel says. The Chacham Amar Echazeh ve'Echazeh min Anasuin. Everything starts when you actually write the ksuba, when you write it down. Ve'Hilchosa, and we paskin Echazeh ve'Echazeh min Anasuin. It all starts when you actually get married. When you start writing the now, if they never end up getting married, there's the Chachamim instituted that you will have to pay the 100 or 200 just from the engagement. But once you wrote a shtar, that shtar is the only thing that matters, and nothing happens, no shibud from beforehand. That's the maskana of the Gemara. The next Mishnah. Hagiyoyresh and his gairo bito ima. So you have a giyoyres that her daughter went through Geiris, and now she became. Now we'll talk. The reason why the Mishnah just sets it up this way is just because we're really trying to focus on the father. The point is that the daughter, even under 3 years old, went through Geiris, and the only way that she could go through Geiris at that age is if her mother, if she goes through Geiris with her mother. Okay. Anyway, the point is Vizinsa, and she's Mizana after she got engaged. Even though she's a Naira, Harezu Bechenek. So she gets Chenek. Now you have to know the basic halacha. The basic halacha is, in the Pasuk, is that a Naira Murasa gets Skilo. That's what the Pasuk discusses. So what the Mishnah, it's not unusual for the Mishnah to tell us the exceptions to the rule. And then, of course, we know everything else is the regular rule. So the Mishnah starts with the exception to the rule, which is you have a Giyaris, which essentially doesn't have a father because there's a machlekes rishonim why we say halachically she doesn't have a father. Rashi says because zirma susum zirmasum, the father zera doesn't really count. Others learn gershin iskayer kikatan shenoy ladami, so it's as if she's just starting over again. The bottom line is she doesn't have a father for halachic purposes. So therefore, the Torah's halacha of skila doesn't apply. So vizinsa ireizu b'chenek. So therefore, the punishment that she will get is chenek, the choking. Ein lo loy pesach beis av v'loy me'asela. And therefore, the other halachas that go with this halacha of naira murasa also don't apply. She doesn't get punished at the door of her father's house. And also, if it turns out to be a lie and she really is a basula, that the husband does not have to pay the 100 sela, the 100 shekel, because there is no father involved. Now, let's say the pregnancy happened before the mother went through Geirus. But the mother went through the Geirus, was Niskaya before the baby was born. Then the halacha of skila applies, because this girl was born as a yid, she's a regular Israelis, so the halacha of skila applies. But once again, there is no father involved because the pregnancy happened while the mother was still a goyto. And therefore the assumption is the father was also a goy. So therefore, if the father was a goy, there is no din of the father. And therefore, the Mishnah concludes and says, but if she became pregnant, meaning after the Geirus, and then, of course, the baby was born, obviously, the mother's already Jewish, she's like a regular Bas Yisrael, there's a father involved, and we're going to see, the Gemara is going to darshan, that even though she's a Geirus, Lamaisa, the parents are Geirus, are Geirim, even though the parents are Geirim, still she was born as a regular Israelis, and a regular Israelis has the regular dinim of what I'll call here Moiti Shemra. Even though it's not really Moiti Shemra, it's the Nayim Urasa. Now the Mishnah continues and says, Yeshla Ave Enlai Pesach, let's say a regular girl, but the father just does not own any property. Or Yeshla Pesach Beis Av, or the father does own property, but the father's already dead. Harezu Beskila, the din of Skila still applies. Lainamar Pesach Beis Av, El Lamitzvah, the concept of Beis Av is just the best way to do it. But it doesn't mean, and it should be done when it can be done, but if it's not Ma'akev, the halacha of Skila is still gonna be intact. Okay, the bottom line is her punishment of skila is still the same regular skila, regardless of whether there's a father or a beis av. So that's the Mishnah. Now, starting on the top of Mendalat on a beis, the Gemara says, Minani Mili. How do we know that just because, even though she's a regular Bas Yisrael, but just because, and how do we know that even though she was originally conceived, the baby was conceived shaloi b'kedusha, meaning the father is not a yid. So how do we know that she still gets a din skilo? She has a din of Bas Yisrael. How do we know that's true? So Amar Eish Lokish to Amar Kro, because the pasuk says umesa, that she deserves to die. L'rabba is that umesa, that extra word umesa. In other words, because we give her skilo and she's mesa. Of course, well, obviously, if you're giving somebody skilo, they're going to die. So why does the pasuk add the extra word umesa? L'rabba sayros v'shaloi b'kedusha v'leidasa b'kedusha. To include, that's the extra word, is to include this extra case that even though she wasn't originally conceived as a Yisraelis, but still she was born as a Yisraelis, so she has the din of Yisraelis that she gets, that even this girl gets a din of skilo. So why doesn't she get Malkus also, like a regular Bas Yisrael? Regular Bas Yisrael would get Malkus. So he said, Umei Yisrael, and there should be a din, Umei Yisrael and Nami L'shalom, and it should be the regular din, that she should pay the 100 shekel to the father. So Amar Kra, Umesa. So by the fact that the Torah, the extra word is Dafka Mesa, we darshan L'misa Nisrabah V'loy L'knas. It's only applicable to the death part of it, which is the Skila part of it. That is the same, but all the other halachas are not the same. So why don't we say, fine, there is an extra pasuk, but maybe that's only coming to tell us when she was even conceived as a regular Yisrael, even though the mother is a Geiris. Hahu Yisraelis mal yosahi. So the Gemara says, I don't need a drasha for that. If she was conceived already as a Yid, the mother, she's a regular Jewish girl. So fine, so then we don't need a pasuk. Fine, you want an extra chiddush, so let's talk about the fact that even if she was conceived, even born as a goy, and now went through conversion, maybe now that should be enough to give her these halachas of anayir murasa. Im came be Yisrael mayahanile. Then what is the word? The Torah add the word be Yisrael. Ki yasa nevala be Yisrael. The pasuk says. So what does it have to do with Yisrael? So the answer is that she has to have some part of her being a Yisrael. That she has to at least be born as a Yisraelis. So therefore, we know that that's the chiddush of the Torah. The chiddush of the Torah again. If you're dealing with a regular Yisraelis, she gets skila. The chiddush is that even if she was conceived as a goy, but now she was born already as a yid, that is enough to consider her Yisraelis for purposes of skila. But since the Torah uses the word umesa, that has to do with the death part of it, it does not apply to the dinim of the knas, the mea shekel, to the mea sela, to the malchus, and so on and so forth. It only applies to the skila. So, Amar Rabbi Yosef Bar Chanina, Hamoitzi Shemra al Hayesoima Potter. If a Moitzi Shemra, as we recall, is the case where a guy gets married, and after he gets married, he claims that his wife was Mizana during Erisin, and therefore she's not a Basula. So, that, so if he's right, of course, then you have Edim to the effect she gets killed. But if it turns out that he's lying, the halacha is he has to pay Me'a Shekel. That's a Maitzi Shemra. Maitzi Shemra is that he has to stay married to her forever and he has to pay the 100 Shekel. If you're dealing with the Yisoyma that there is no father, you're Potter. He doesn't have to pay. Shenemar, it says, V'nosnu la'avi ha'nairo. You have to give the money to the father of the nairo. Prat luzu shein la'av. So in this case, where she doesn't have a father, you don't have to pay. The reason why we're bringing this up is obviously is because we just compared this to the case of the Giyaris that didn't have a father. Also, over there we say that she still gets Misa. But when it comes to the paying the 100 shekel, without a father, you don't have to pay. So the Gemara asks, Maisa Rabbi Yosef bar Abin, the Itame Rabbi Yosef bar Zvido. So he asks the question, the Imoin Yimoin of Viho. It says over there that if it turns out that this is talking about Oinus Umafat by the Oinus case, that if either of them refuse to get married, they don't have to get married. So the Moin Yimoin, the double Lashon is the Vil, the Rabbi is Yisoyma Leknas, to say that the Yisoyma does get Knas. Divir Rabbi Yosi Aglili. The Rabbi Yosi Aglili says that the Moin Yimoin says that it could either be the father or the daughter, but the point is they could refuse to get married, and if they refuse to this marriage with the Ma'anes, with the Oinus Umafata, so then they get the 100 shekel. Now, if we're talking about Moin Yimoin, that means we're talking about even if she is a Yisoyma. It's because one is talking about for the father and one is talking about for the girl. And still we see that even though there's no father, the Ma'anes is going to be chayef to pay. That contradicts what we just said 2 seconds ago by Moitzi Shemra, that if there's no father, you don't have to pay. So the Gemara says, "Hu moisiv lov, hu mefarik lov." He asked the question, but he's able to answer it as well. Very simple teretz, that the case happened that when the act of the oinus happened, the father was still alive. So that triggered the obligation. The fact that the father eventually died doesn't alleviate his obligation, doesn't get rid of his obligation. So even though the father's not there to collect, she'll be able to collect, and she'll be able to do the mian. But the point is that he already had the chiyuv when the father was alive. So according to this teretz, it comes out that you really do need the father in order to trigger the chiyuv. Because the father was alive when the act happened. It's just that he turned out later that he wasn't alive. But mashma, that if the father was already dead before anything happened, he wouldn't have an obligation. That is what Rabbi Yosef bar Zvido says. Rova omar chayiv. Rabbi says that's not true. You're going to be chayiv. He disagrees with the whole thing. It's not true. Even if there's no father over here, he argues on the whole halacha. And he says, you're not potter, just because there's no father, you're still chayiv. Just like the halacha over here is your chayiv. Mimai, and he brings a raya. How do I know this? Miditoni ami, because we learned as follows. Besulas Yisrael. The halacha is that a besulas Yisrael gets the chayiv to pay. Veloi besulas geirim. But if she's a geiris, she does not get to collect the 100 in the case of Oinus. In the case of Moitzi Shemra, she doesn't get to collect the 100 shekel. Now, if the halacha originally was that Yisrael, that she is now a Yisoyma, and she doesn't have a father, and there was naturally the halacha was your chayiv, so now it makes sense to say that a ger is not chayiv, that even though she's a ger, so she's a Yisraelis now, because she doesn't have a father, I get it, so she doesn't collect. But it makes sense that you need a chiddush by ger if the normal halacha was that a regular girl without a father also does collect, so the chiddush is that the ger doesn't collect. Eliyam Rabbi Yisrael ki agavna potter. But if you're telling me that under normal circumstances, even a regular Yisraelis, anytime there's no father, doesn't collect, has to be Yisrael potter, so by Yisrael they don't collect. The ger mi boy, we would need a pasuk to tell us the ger doesn't collect. Of course the ger doesn't collect, she has no father. So if a regular Yisraelis doesn't collect without a father, certainly a Geiris doesn't collect without a father. There is no father to talk about. So obviously she's not going to collect. So therefore Rava says by process of deduction, it has to be that a regular Yisrael pays, is chayiv, and it's only by, because she's a ger, that she's excluded from the parsha, and he doesn't have to pay the Me'a Shekel. Okay. The Gemara continues. Amar Eish Lakish HaMoitzi Shemra Ala Ketana Potter. So this is a Gemara that you should that we did discuss, we touched on before, because till now we've always been discussing a Naira, that she's between the age of 12 and 12 and a half. Reish Lakish says that if the story were to happen to a Ketana under the age of 12, again, these halachas don't apply, she's potter. Shenemar, because the Pasuk says, V'nosu lavi ha-Naira. It has to give the money to the father of a Naira. Naira mole diver ha-Kosev. The Torah says that it has to be actually a Naira. Now, it's interesting, because here in the Parsha, many places in the Torah, we read the word Naira, even though it's written without a hey. Happens to be in the Parsha of Moitzi Shemra, the Torah does include the hay in the Naira. So therefore we understand that it applies only to a Naira, to a girl who's over 12. So a girl under the age of 12, there is not going to be the regular chiyuvim of Moitzi Shemra, you're not going to have to pay the shekel. Okay. So the maskit lo Rav Acha bar Abba. So Rav Acha bar Abba says, one second, time of the Kosebe HaNaira. You're telling me the only reason you're chayiv that it doesn't apply to a katana is because the Torah wrote it in full. Halav hachi hav amina afilu katana. If not for that diuk that you're going to tell me that we would think that the din of Moitzei Shemra applies to a katana, how could that be? Haksiv, part of the parsha says, v'im emes haya adavar, if in fact she was mezana, hadavar azeh, v'loin nimsu besulo l'naira, and she turns out not to be a besulo, v'hoitzioi es ha-naira el pesach besavio v'saklua. And the halacha is, this is all a quote from the pasuk, you're going to give her skilo. Now, v'ketana lahav bas einshinhi. How could you possibly have a havamina that this parsha is talking about a ketana? She would never get killed. A ketana, a young girl under the age of 12, would never be responsible and chayev to be punished with death. Elo. So what the diuk that the Gemara is making like this. You're right. Elakan naira. Over here, of course, it has to be a naira, because if we're talking about death, we have to be talking about a girl over the age of 12. But it has to be talking about a naira. And the fact that the Torah used the word naira with a hey to describe this case, hakol mokim shenemar nar, anytime the Torah writes the word nar, pronounced nairo, afilu katana b'mashma, then those other cases, the word nairo over there without the hay is going to mean a katana. So enachanami, for purposes of whether this particular parsha is talking about a nairo, a girl over the age of 12, it has to be over the age of 12. But that is exactly the point. The fact that the Torah specifically uses the nairo with a hay in this context that has to be over 12, proves to us that anytime the Torah does not use the hay, where it could be talking about either a naira or a katana, this fact that the Torah left off the hay is coming to tell us that we are including the katana, even the reference or the point that the Torah is trying to make is, if I don't say the hay and it could apply to a katana, I want it to include a katana. Over here, where it has to be talking about a naira, we use the hay. So to tell us that the hay does represent that it's only the naira, because it has to be talking about a naira. That means where it doesn't say the hay, and it could apply to a katana, will tell us that it could apply to a katana. Okay, we're going to stop over here, because this next gemara leads into the next daf on mem hay.